It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Turkey's ruling Justice and Development Party, also known as the AKP, swept to a surprising victory in Sunday's snap parliamentary polls after losing its majority in a June polling. Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal tells VOA most observers were expecting a different result.
Two important things happened which led to this result. One of those was that some of the violence that took place actually scared many of the people who had gone on to the Nationalist Party to come back to the AKP. And the second thing that happened was there was a conscious realization that you have to have a powerful government, a more secure, stable government, which can last there for 5 years to be able to take care of some of the new issues that have started to develop.
Sunday's vote followed months of rising tensions between the government and a loose alliance of pro-Kurdish leftists, feminists, and nationalist Kurds. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is on a visit to Central Asia to follow stops in Europe and the Middle East. On Sunday, he met with leaders of the 5 former Soviet republics of Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan, which are all concerned about a resurgence of the Taliban in Afghanistan and the recruitment of their people into terrorist organizations such as the Islamic State. At least 11 Boko Haram militants were killed Sunday in separate attacks on Chadian army post around Lake Chad on the Nigerian border. Reuters reports at least 2 Chadian soldiers were also killed. Before being killed, one of the militants detonated an explosive device, wounding 11 civilians. Chad is part of the multinational force formed to destroy the Boko Haram insurgency. This is VOA News. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for a deadly attack on a hotel in its capital, Mogadishu, Sunday that left at least 12 dead. Authorities say the militants set off a car bomb at the entrance to the Sahafi Hotel. Following the blast, gunmen stormed the hotel, which is popular with government officials and business executives. All the attackers, wearing Burundian military uniforms, were killed by security forces. Also killed was General Abdikarim Yusuf Bagandagan, a former army commander who led the offensive that forced Al-Shabaab to retreat from Mogadishu in August of 2011. 2 Somali lawmakers also died. Police in Bangladesh say they are investigating a local radical Islamist group in the latest attacks, deadly attacks on 2 publishers in the capital, Dhaka. Senior police officials say they suspect the band group Ansarullah Bangla team carried out Saturday's attack, but another militant group, Al-Qaeda, and the Indian subcontinent also claim responsibility. Dozens of teachers, students, writers, and protesters rallied Sunday at Dhaka University to protest the attacks. Latest attacks come amid fears about the rise of extremist Islamist groups in Bangladesh. At least 4 atheist bloggers have been murdered in the country this year. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter has called on North Korea to end its nuclear weapons program. Secretary Carter visited the demilitarized zone on Sunday.
Not only the United States and South Korea, but also China and Japan and Russia and the so-called 6-party talks to call for the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
Secretary Carter said it is important for the United States and South Korea to maintain a strong alliance. A U.S. Navy salvage team is preparing to launch a remotely operated submersible to confirm that wreckage discovered near the Bahamas is that of the cargo ship El Faro, lost in a storm at sea last month. The ship vanished on October 1st with 33 crew members during Hurricane Joaquin. The loss of El Faro was the worst maritime accident involving a U.S. flag vessel since 1983. And in sports news, the Kansas City Royals won their first World Series crown since 1985, capitalizing on a critical mistake to the game in the 9th inning and then breaking away in the 12th to beat the New York Mets 7-2 in Game 5 on Sunday. Get more news by going to our website. You can find us at voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, the second day of November, and here are some of the stories we are covering. It appears the death toll in Sunday's Al-Shabaab attack on a popular hotel has risen.
The death toll has risen since yesterday's attack in Mogadishu. So far, has increased to 15, including three senior officials, including a member of parliament and also a former chief of Somali military army.
Abdi Rahman Omar Osman is a former Somali Minister of Information and former spokesman to the Somali president. A DRC government spokesman denies election delay report. President Obama names the U.S. delegation to attend Ivory Coast President Ouattara's second inauguration. And a war of words between the spokesman of Nigeria's ruling APC party and the main opposition PDP.
We cannot be whining when we provide alternatives to the federal government. We cannot be whining when we are pointing out to the government what they are doing that is not proper.
Olisa Metu is National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. We'll tell you about the origin of emerging infectious diseases in West Africa, and the World Health Organization says tuberculosis kills more people than HIV/AIDS. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. It appears the death toll in Sunday's deadly attack by the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab on a hotel in Somali capital Mogadishu has risen to 15. Initially, it was reported 12 people had been killed. On the line to Mogadishu is Abdi Rahman Omar Osman, former Somali Minister of Information and former spokesman to the Somali president. Good morning to you, Abdi Rahman.
Thank you very much, James. Good morning to you, too.
So what is the latest now about the attacks?
Yes, James, the death toll has risen since yesterday's attack in Mogadishu. So far has increased to 15, including three senior officials, including a member of parliament who has been before a state minister and also a former chief of Somali military army who was one of the bravest chief of army that Somalis have seen for decades, as well as the owner of the hotel who has been a businessman. Those are the great losses that Somalis are mourning yesterday and today, which was an unfortunate incident, but due to the security forces' response, they responded quickly, and that has prevented more casualties to happen yesterday in one of the biggest hotels in Mogadishu.
Now, is it true that the death toll also includes some journalists?
Yes. What happened was the first attack took place at the hotel, and then a couple of hours later, they detonated a car outside where the journalists came and tried to cover the story, and that car has been detonated. As a result of that, we had one cameraman from Jazeera TV who was killed, and also another journalist from Reuters who has been injured.
Now, you said as many as 15 people have died. The story I have is 12. Are you saying the death toll has increased?
Yes, has increased. As a result, we also have 30 injured.
The president of Somalia has described, yes, Al-Shabaab as an increasingly desperate, internally divided group of extremists. But every time it seems that progress is being made in Somalia, Al-Shabaab resurfaces.
I think it's very clear that Al-Shabaab has lost so many territories, the security in Mogadishu and in Somalia, and has been making progress over the time. And this is, I think, the African Union forces who are here are really the ones who fought in a terrorist group vividly with a huge success. Nevertheless, the Al-Shabaab militia has changed the tactics to asymmetric warfare, and that is where it is becoming very difficult to fight people who want to die for the cause. It's a way of showing that they're losing the territory, and this is a way to show to the world that they're still alive and kicking. But I can assure you that they have lost territory, they have lost men, they are divided, and they will be irrelevant soon. But at the moment, it's difficult to contain suicide bombers who want to kill themselves.
Abdi Rahman Omar Osman is a former Somali Minister of Information and former spokesman of the Somali president. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mogadishu. The information minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo is denying a report that one of his colleagues said that DRC elections slated for next year will have to be delayed up to 4 years. Nick Long has more for VOA from Goma in eastern Congo.
Saturday, the Reuters news agency quoted ruling coalition spokesman André Alain Atundu as saying a national census would need to be carried out and voter rolls revised to ensure the credibility of a vote, so people need to allow 2 to 4 years for elections to be organised. But in a text message Sunday, Information Minister Lambert Mende told VOA the report is false. He asked where and when Atundu had made this statement. He suggested it had been circulated by pranksters on social media. A Reuters reporter told VOA he had been present with a number of other journalists when Atundu made the statement. The report is being taken seriously by leading opposition politician Moise Katumbi, a likely presidential contender who issued a statement saying the ruling coalition's call to delay national elections is troubling. He said the people want regular, free, fair and transparent elections, starting with a national election in the fall of 2016. Katumbi has called for anyone choosing to protest the possible delay to do so peacefully for the strength of the country. In January, a legislative proposal to delay the DRC elections triggered protests in which at least 40 people died, according to Human Rights Watch. US Undersecretary of State for Democracy Sarah Sewell said last week during a visit to Goma that it is important to update voter rolls in Congo, but she suggested this was not a reason for delaying elections.
It is our view that the registration process does not need to be lengthy. One of the concerns about not having youth registered is that people could question the legitimacy of the outcome of the election given the numbers involved. So our view is that we should move swiftly toward the registration of those who are of majority.
Critics of DRC President Joseph Kabila have often accused him of wanting to cling to power in defiance of the constitution's two-term limit. He has denied seeking to change the constitution. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
U.S. President Barack Obama on Sunday announced a presidential delegation to attend tomorrow's second inauguration of Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara. The delegation will be led by Thomas A. Shannon, Counselor of the Department of State, and includes Terrence P. McCauley, U.S. Ambassador to Cote d'Ivoire, and Linda Thomas-Greenfield, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. As VOA's Emily Yap reports from Abidjan, the 73-year-old President Ouattara faces challenges as he begins his second five-year term.
Speaking to VOA's French Africa reporter Tatiana Masso earlier this week, newly re-elected President Alassane Ouattara said he was a happy man. He had just won the presidential election, winning 83% of the votes and effectively achieving the first-round knockout that he said he was pursuing during his electoral campaign.
Le score de mon élection est quelque chose d'exceptionnel. Cela traduit tout de même.
Ouattara says the results are exceptional and that they show a great trust from the people in his policies and action. Most of all, he said, elections were peaceful for the first time in 25 years. During the previous presidential election in 2010, clashes between supporters of then-president Laurent Gbagbo and his challenger, Ouattara, killed more than 3,000 people. While they conceded defeat and congratulated him, his defeated challengers called for him to address the issue of reconciliation.
On observe des taux d'abstention élevés dans des zones ayant vécu durement les affres de la crise post-électorale de 2010.
Ouattara's main challenger, Pascal Affien-Guesson, says there were high rates of abstention in zones deeply affected by the 2010-2011 post-election crisis. He said it shows that people are still scared, and it confirms that the country needs reconciliation and democracy. Jim Warmington, West Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch, says a key to this reconciliation is an equal justice.
Perpetrators from both sides of the post-election crisis should be held to account, and Human Rights Watch and others found that abuses were committed not just by pro-Bagbo forces, but also by pro-Ouattara forces.
Warmington also said the government should find a solution to the lasting land conflict in the west of the country, which drove conflicts in the past. During his interview with VOA, Ouattara vowed to put social cohesion and equal justice at the center of his second mandate, but said it takes time. The 73-year-old president also said economic growth will help reconciliation. During his first term, he focused on bringing the country's economy back on track. Production of the country's main export, cocoa, has recovered, and the country has grown at an annual rate of 9% over the last 3 years. While his supporters praise him for building roads and bridges, others note that one can't eat bridges. The number is decreasing, but 46% of Ivorians still live in poverty, according to the World Bank. The government says it created 2 million jobs in the last 4 years alone, but unemployment is still high, especially among the youth. Emily Diop for VOA News in Abidjan.
Today is Monday, the second day of November, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. It appears a war of words between the spokesman of Nigeria's ruling All Progressive Congress APC party and the opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, has intensified. APC National Publicity Secretary Lai Mohammed reportedly told the PDP to stop whining, rebrand itself, or go down. This after the PDP accused President Muhammadu Buhari of continuously making negative comments about Nigeria's economy, which the party said is driving away investors. Lai Mohammed accused the PDP of being the architect of his own downfall. But Olisa Metu, National Publicity Secretary of the PDP, says President Buhari should come up with his own programs how to fix what the president said is Nigeria's bankrupt economy instead of continuously criticizing former President Goodluck Jonathan's government.
Well, we cannot be whining when we provide alternatives and options to the federal government. We cannot be whining when we are pointing out to the government what they are doing that is not proper. We cannot be whining when we are telling the government that they are not doing anything to grow our economy. We cannot be whining when we tell the government that they are demarcating the economy of the country and are scaring away potential investors to our system. I think what is happening is that the APC are tired of the lies that they've been dishing out to Nigerians and are trying to hide the fact that this government is practicing a dictatorship. And the government itself lacks ideas and programs on how to develop the Nigerian economy, how to sustain the gains of the past 16 years by the PDP.
You are also saying that President Buhari is making negative statements about the state of Nigeria's economy.
I think when our president meets with the foreign investors, he should concentrate on telling them the potentials abound in our country and areas of possible development. He should make sure that he markets Nigeria as being attractive to foreign investors. But this is not what we have seen. What we have seen is whenever our president meets with the international community, he misinforms them that our countrymen are very corrupt, that we are broke, and that we cannot even pay salaries of ministers. Who will come and invest in this country when you make that kind of statement?
Olisa, I think what President Buhari has been doing was to tell the world or tell Nigerians that when he took over the government, in fact, he mentioned the treasury was almost bankrupt, and he says he's going to do his best to rid the country of corruption. So, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. He's not giving Nigeria a bad name.
Let me inform you that our president, just as recent as 4 days ago, made a pronouncement that the country is broke and that we cannot afford to pay salaries of ministers. And he said this after being in charge of the country for 6 months. And in these 6 months, he's not been able to bring out any program to assist or grow the economy of the country. So we are saying that after being in charge of the country in 6 months, why don't you think about areas when you meet people that you need partners in particular fields, in areas we need people to partner us in agriculture? This is our vision in the oil industry, in the mining industry, and we need people to cooperate with us. But however, we are really concerned because the business community in Nigeria are feeling the bite. You see, in Nigeria, multinational companies are laying off thousands of workers, and this is not good. When Obama took over government, there were issues that had to do with the economy of the United States. But he set about his policies and his programs. He did not dwell on the past 8 years of a Republican government.
Olisa Metu is the National Publicity Secretary of the opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. The World Health Organization says tuberculosis is now the world's leading infectious killer, topping HIV/AIDS. As viewer Carol Pearson reports from Washington, the WHO says the world needs more aggressive efforts to curb the epidemic.
Tuberculosis is an infectious disease that mainly affects the poor, and those who have it are often stigmatized. The World Health Organization considers TB an epidemic. WHO is looking for an infusion of close to $3 billion for research into new drugs, new diagnostic tools, and better surveillance so those with the disease can be treated. Since 1990, the death rate from TB has fallen by nearly 50%, but the WHO says more progress must be made.
You cannot accept 4,400 people dying every day of a curable disease.
Tuberculosis is 90% curable, unless it's a strain that is multi-drug resistant. Only about half of the people who suffer from that strain survive. Some doctors compare it to the deadly Ebola virus, only more easily transmitted.
Multi-drug resistant tuberculosis, MDR-TB, is like Ebola with wings because it has the same risk of transmission to other people. It can be transmitted even just by coughing in the air, in the train, in the church, in a bar, in a hospital. So it's a serious threat.
Starting in January of 2016, the WHO will launch an effort to end TB. Those involved in this effort believe it can happen.
That 47% drop in deaths from TB is from hard work. It didn't just kind of happen. And what it has told us is that indeed hard work does reflect itself in a drop in new infections, and we need to do more in more places and sustain that effort everywhere.
Goosby says the world is beginning to understand the severity of the TB threat. As it does, the WHO hopes support for efforts to end the disease will increase. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
75% of all emergent infectious diseases in the last half century have come from animal reservoirs, including the recent Ebola outbreak in West Africa. To fight this threat, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, recently announced an $87 million grant to the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization to fund more activities that control animal diseases and related health issues in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. Dennis Carroll is Director of Global Health Security and Development at USAID. He tells Ricky Stryat that the emergency funding means prevention and risk mitigation measures that were previously employed in East Africa will now be used in West Africa as well.
It's to support FAO's role in battling emerging infectious disease threats, particularly in the expanded work in Africa to deal with Ebola and Ebola-like threats within Africa.
This Ebola outbreak was believed to have been started from an interaction with a bat, but it obviously had its impact largely because of infrastructure issues in West Africa. So will it be as broad-reaching as that, looking at actually helping infrastructure issues when it comes to dealing with public health threats?
The investment in FAO is part of a larger package of investments that we are making, along with other parts of the U.S. government. So we're looking at collectively the full range of skills and capacities that need to be addressed across both the human health and animal health sectors. And so the particular investment in FAO is targeting those issues that fall within the animal health domain.
How important is the link in places like West and Central Africa between animal and human health?
This is focusing on emerging infectious diseases. And what we know is that 3/4 of all emergent infectious diseases over the last half century, they've emerged out of animal reservoirs, whether it's Ebola or influenzas or Marburg or others. Basically, animals act as the major reservoir for new infectious disease threats. And so as we think about how we prevent new infectious disease threats or identify their emergence early, you really need to be looking across both the human health and the animal health spectrum. We can actually look further upstream and monitor, identify these threats while they're still in animals, and then bring interventions to bear to disrupt their ability to spill over and spread into human populations.
So I'd imagine you're talking about a monitoring and then public education, lots of different aspects of these kinds of programs would need to be put in place to make that a reality.
Exactly right. You know, the biggest challenge we have is the uncontrolled movement of these potential viruses in animal populations that then, as people and animals interact, both around wildlife populations but also around livestock, the opportunity for those viruses to spill over into human populations. So the first point of, if you will, of prevention is better managing the way wildlife and livestock populations are managed.
Dennis Carroll is Director of Global Health, Security and Development at the U.S. Agency for International Development. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Washington, D.C. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Kenyan defending champion Mary Keitany retained her title with a winning time of 2 hours, 24 minutes and 25 seconds at the New York City Marathon in the United States of America on Sunday. Ethiopian Asefelek Amaya was 7 seconds behind her, while Tigista Tufa, also of Ethiopia, was a further 18 seconds adrift. Meanwhile, Kenyan Stanley Biwott carried the day in the men's race in 2 hours, 10 minutes and 34 seconds. World half marathon champion Geoffrey Kamoror, also of Kenya, was runner-up, with Ethiopian Lelisa Desisa placed third. Turning to football, a first-half goal scored by Sekou Keita ensured Mali triumphed over Croatia by a solitary goal in quarterfinal action at the FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Chile and Chile on Sunday. Earlier in the day, defending champions Nigeria dismissed Brazil 3-0 in Vina del Mar. Midfielder Kingsley Michael, strikers Victor Osimhen and Udochukwu Anumudu each found the back of the net to secure the Golden Eaglets' place in Thursday's final. In Algeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe pipped their hosts USM Algiers 2-1 in the opening leg of their Orange Africa Champions League final in Algiers on Saturday. Meanwhile, Ivory Coast pipped visitors Ghana 1-0 in the return leg of their tie in the qualifier for the African Nations Championship due in Rwanda next January. Ghana won the first leg 2-1. However, Ivory Coast progressed to Rwanda on their away goal rule. In cricket, Kenya emerged surprise winners against hosts Namibia in the ICC World Cricket League Championship tie in Windhoek on Friday. The Kenyans squeezed an 11-run victory despite travelling without a coach owing to internal team differences. Finally, South Africa beat Argentina 24-13 to clinch the bronze medal at the Rugby World Cup in London, England on Friday. Defending champions New Zealand retained their title with a convincing 34-17 triumph over Australia in the final in London on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, the second day of November.
In place of the proposed 10,000 policemen to be employed in Nigeria, Mr. President should rather peru the vigilante members that have been doing voluntary services for the past 10 years so that they shall assist the military in combating the insurgency. In John Shear in Obanuku, Ogudu-Katsi Ranch, Cross Rapids, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment. Please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. And that is it for this Monday, November 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we'll explore the secrets of doing business in Africa from an American corporate executive's perspective. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they share how U.S. companies can best play catch-up with the fastest-growing continent. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Next on Let's Talk, beauty or brain? Which one would you choose first when you look for a lifetime partner? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing beauty or brain. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.